From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Gregory Verdine from Harvard University is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about stapled peptides.
Dr. Gregory Verdine is Harvard College professor and Irving Professor of Chemistry in the Department of Cellular and Molecular Biology at Harvard University. He is also a founder of Aileron Therapeutics, as well as co-chairman of the scientific advisory board at that company. At Harvard, Dr. Verdine's group focuses on the structure and function of nucleic acids, with particular attention to the interactions of nucleic acids and proteins. Dr. Verdine, let's start with the basic question. What are stapled peptides?
Stapled peptides are small fragments of protein. So a peptide is a fragment of a protein. And these have had a synthetic modification introduced into them. We call that synthetic modification a staple. And what the staple does is to reinforce a particular three-dimensional fold on the peptide. And that fold is called an alpha helix. So stapled peptides, in summary then, are small fragments of proteins that have been synthetically modified to adopt an alpha helical structure. And that operation of forcing them to adopt an alpha helical structure causes them to have high binding affinity for their targets. It causes them to have long serum half-lives in animals, and it causes them to be resistant to protease degradation. And probably the most important feature, and the one that has really, I think, propelled the pharmaceutical interest in stapled peptides, is that it causes them to be able to penetrate cells so as to access targets that are inside of the cell. And that's something which, in general, these fragments of proteins lacking a staple are not able to do. So it confers upon them the ability to penetrate cells and to access targets inside of the cell.
When and how were these molecules first discovered, and by whom?
The first report of stapled peptides was made in 2000 in a publication in the Journal of the American Chemical Society. It took several years, several years prior to that, to analyze, to test, to synthesize many different possible staple configurations to find the two different configurations that are really very effective. I should mention that there is a long and illustrious history of people introducing synthetic modifications into peptides in order to try to stabilize them in an alpha helical conformation. So we benefited in the design of our staple from all of that earlier work, and we incorporated the sort of the best notions from that prior work. The system that we eventually, it's really invented by Christian Schaffmeister in my lab, the system that we finally landed on is one which had this extraordinary ability to penetrate cells, and that's something which had not been seen in any of the prior work published in the literature.
Now, you mentioned that this ability to penetrate cells really caught the attention of the pharmaceutical industry, and most recently Roche. How precisely does this process work, and why is the term drugging the undruggable often associated with staple peptides?
Part of the reason why the term drugging the undruggable is associated with stapled peptides is because it's the title of the talk that I've given all over the world presenting the science of stapled peptides. And so I should explain. So the association really comes from the fact that my lecture, when I discuss stapled peptides, is entitled Drugging the Undruggable, and in fact I've written papers using that title as well. Now, why is it that stapled peptides, that I can lay claim to drugging the undruggable, and what in the world does undruggable mean to begin with? And to explain that, we have to take a step back a little bit. And so if you'll indulge me for just a moment, I'll take a step backward and to look at what does drugging actually mean. And, of course, it means creating a molecule that binds with high affinity and specificity and that modulates the activity of a target. So that's basically what a drug is. And when you carry off that operation, it's called drugging. It turns out that the vast majority of human proteins are not druggable. There are only two classes of drugs that have been, so let's leave stapled peptides aside for the moment because we think this might be an entirely new class. But the classes that have a long history of clinical effectiveness in humans are small molecules, which usually have, you know, at most a few dozen atoms, usually under molecular weight 500 or so. And then protein therapeutics or biologicals, which have, you know, often thousands of atoms, very, very large molecules, usually, you know, over 25 or 30,000 Daltons. So small molecules are only able to target human proteins that have a specific surface feature called a hydrophobic pocket. If a target doesn't have a hydrophobic pocket, there's nothing you can do to target it using a small molecule. It's untargetable, or people use the term undruggable. Roughly 10% of all human proteins, at the most, have a hydrophobic pocket and are therefore druggable by small molecules. The world of biologics is restricted only, so protein therapeutics cannot penetrate cells. Again, setting aside stapled peptides for the moment, protein therapeutics, these are things like insulin, growth hormone, monoclonal antibodies, Herceptin, etc. They cannot penetrate cells, and so their operating range is restricted to extracellular human proteins. It's estimated that roughly 10% of all human proteins are extracellular. So if you have only two types of targeting molecules, small molecules, you can access at most 10% of all targets. If you have only biologicals, you can only access the 10% of proteins in humans that are extracellular. Everything else, greater than 80% that remains, are considered undruggable. So the sad fact is that right now we are really, really limited in our ability to target or drug human targets. Stapled peptides comes into this area with a whole new type of molecule. So it's a molecule that has a much larger surface area, and so therefore it's able to bind proteins or targets that lack a hydrophobic pocket. And it's also able to penetrate cells. And so it carries with it the ability to get into cells and to target all of those things that neither small molecules nor biologicals can target.
Would you talk about the potential range of applications for stapled peptides? Or in other words, which types of diseases might be most suitably addressed by the use of these molecules and why?
What we know about stapled peptides at this stage is that they penetrate cells by a very particular mechanism that's mediated by an endosomal uptake pathway. That is to say, cells take up stapled peptides by an energy-dependent, almost sort of like a tractor beam, you know, pulling the stapled peptide into the cell. And that is a pathway that's really seems to be particular to human cells. So at least as we now understand it, that would seem to limit stapled peptides to therapeutic areas where the target is a human cell, or maybe even a virus that has a membrane or a virus that infects human cells. So probably not useful for antifungal agents, probably not useful for antibacterials. But if the target is a human cell, then there's really not any obvious restriction on which cell type it would be targeting. So we think, I think the Roche collaboration, which was recently announced with Aileron, the company I founded to pharmaceuticalize stapled peptide technology, that deal has five different therapeutic areas, and I think it reflects the notion that stapled peptides should be useful in all kinds of therapeutic areas, pain, inflammation, arthritis, neurodegenerative disease, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's not any significant restriction that I can think of other than for cases where the target is not a human cell.
Where do stapled peptides stand in terms of their development? Is it preclinical or is there any clinical work? Just where are they?
They're now at the late preclinical stage. So I don't know the exact timeline for entry into humans, as that's a confidential information from Aileron Therapeutics. I think what has been publicly disclosed is, and I should mention that I have a conflict of interest in that I am an advisor to the company and also a founder and a shareholder, and I need to mention that. But my understanding is that the first stapled peptide will go into cancer patients sometime in the calendar year 2011, and it will be taken in for patients who have cancer driven by a protein known as MCL1. MCL1 turns out to be one of the most exciting new targets in cancer, and it looks like a stapled peptide will be the first agent that enters the clinic to target this exciting new oncogene, MCL1.
As you look at stapled peptide technology, and again, you've been studying this for a number of years now, what barriers do you see still need to be overcome before this people can really look at this and say, this is really a potential and promising new therapeutic?
That's a great question. You know, I think the field really, you know, has seen a lot of white knights in shining armor in the pharmaceutical world. And I think people rightfully so view that when a molecule shows safety and efficacy in human clinical trials, that's when it's no longer a ligand and when you can begin to think of it as a drug. So that's why this entry of this first stapled peptide into clinical trials is going to be so critical. All that said, there are significant hurdles that face the development of any new class of molecules. Consider, for example, when monoclonal antibodies were first developed as a class of molecules, one had to learn what are the best ways to administer them, what are you looking for pharmacologically, what sorts of half-lives would you like to dial in, how do you measure the molecule in the blood. So every new class of molecules has its own pharmacology, and that's certainly the case for stapled peptides. For example, stapled peptides are taken up actively by cells, and so the amount of blood in the amount of stapled peptide in the bloodstream does not accurately reflect the amount of stapled peptide in the tissue. And so in the course of developing stapled peptides, Aileron and their pharmaceutical partners will really have to focus on the individual characteristics of this new class of molecule as a pharmacologic entity and learn how best to optimize those structures. So on the one hand, it's very exciting for these molecules to be making their way into the clinic. On the other hand, when in the pharmaceutical world, when any new class of molecules comes on stream, one really does have to learn what makes them tick in patients.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.